This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of October 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of October, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: Christmas car park shake-up for city, sports centre land deal close, and Dame to speak at charity bash. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is Christmas car park shake up for city. Bid to get more city shoppers. Winchester is to undergo a car parking shake up to cope with the thousands of visitors who descend on the city centre over Christmas, it has been revealed. It comes after traffic problems in the city throughout the festive season over the past couple of years. Now businesses and parking chiefs are to launch new schemes they hope will ease the pressure on city centre roads. They include more parking marshals and extended park and ride opening times. The new move to ease congestion has been put forward by Winchester Business Improvement District, BID, and the City Council. As part of the shake-up, a car park counter will be put in place which will show the amount of parking spaces in certain car parks around the city, including park and rides and a number of city centre car parks. City Transport boss Councillor James Burns said this should stop motorists driving around the centre of Winchester hunting for a space, as they can check the counter before leaving the house. The city, known as the Christmas Capital, is a favourite for thousands of both visitors and tourists who travel to attend the famous Christmas Market and Ice Rink, which open on November the 18th. Other new initiatives being implemented are extended bus times for park and ride car parks to 8:30 p.m, an hour later, and the availability of the lift and toilets at Chessel Street multi-storey car park at the weekends. Traffic marshals, funded by BID, will be on duty at the Brooks Shopping Centre car park and King Alfred statue, providing information and parking directions to incoming vehicles. Parking marshals will also be on hand in the park and ride car parks on peak days to help people find parking spaces and ease traffic flow. Councillor Burns added that although the council was not increasing the amount of spaces in the city, the new measure should give extra capacity at one of the busiest times of the year. Winchester is an enchanting place to visit and shop at Christmas, said Councillor Burns, but we need to ensure that people enjoy the whole experience from their arrival to the moment they leave. BID members will also be offered 150 spaces at weekends on the lower deck at Tower Street car park to leave spaces in public car parks for shoppers. More parking will also be provided for City Council staff at St Catherine's Park and Ride and the Bar End Depot to leave spaces at Chessel Multistory for shoppers. The Council is also confident that the opening this year of the new Park and Ride at Pitt, with its 199 spaces, will also help to ensure that visitors can find a space that suits their needs. Catherine Turnus, Executive Director of Winchester BID, said, "Winchester really and truly has become the home of Christmas, and as such, we want everyone to feel that their needs have been catered for when they come here to shop, skate, eat out, or be entertained."
Sports Centre land deal close. Winchester Civic Chiefs are close to tying up a deal to buy land from Tesco for a site of a new multi-million pound sports centre, Chronicle can reveal. The City Council is in advanced negotiations with the supermarket over the garrison ground off Bar End Road on the southern edge of the city. Tesco has owned the land for more than 20 years and had one once planned to develop it for a supermarket before opting for Eastern Lane Winnall in the mid-1990s. The company had ambitions to develop it for housing, but have been rebuffed by City Council planners. Now the two parties are discussing a deal to sell the site for around £2.2 million, an informed source has told the Chronicle. If the deal is completed, it would allow the City Council to build a new £29 million sports centre directly off Bar End Road, instead of the current proposal to build on part of the King George V playing field, a play area and artificial pitch, with a new road access through the former Bar End depot. Councillor Leader Stephen Godfrey declined to discuss the issue in detail, but said, "I would rather not talk about it until we have a signature on the dotted line. We don't want to lose the sale. It's a great opportunity for the city if we can wrap up the deal. Good progress has been made." The City Council is considering a new leisure centre, with the two options either to remain on the site of the 1970s centre at River Park or move to Bar End. One option is to build a £50 metre pool. The Chronicle reported last September that the council and Tesco supermarket were discussing the sale. The council has held a public consultation with people living in the Highcliffe Bar End area. The Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust is keen to safeguard the garrison ground for recreational use. And there is a picture of the front entrance of the present River Park Leisure Centre, and a small picture of smiling Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of Winchester City Council.
Dame to speak at Charity Bash. She is one of the most well-known faces on TV and movie screens. Dame Judi Dench has appeared in some of Hollywood's biggest movies, including 7 James Bond films, as well as Shakespeare in Love, Iris and Chocolate. Now the 81-year-old Oscar winner is set to come to Hampshire in December to support a Winchester family support charity. Dame Judi Dench will be supported by friend and biographer John Miller for the evening, which takes place at Winchester Guildhall on December the 12th. The funds raised will help Home Start Winchester, which provides friendship and emotional and practical help to parents. It has been 4 years since her last visit to the Best of British Festival in 2012, and she will be regaling her audience with anecdotes of her many performances since then, looking back at some of the significant events in her life and reflecting on those friends and colleagues who have most influenced her in her long career. Homestart Winchester Chairman Liz Cooper said, "We are very grateful for the sponsorship from Dutton Gregory Solicitors, which has enabled us to stage such an important event. Working with local businesses is crucial, as each year we must raise 90% of our income from fundraising, donations and gifts, so that we can maintain our support for vulnerable families in this area. We must also thank John Miller for bringing Dame Judi to Winchester." Head of Business Development and Marketing at Dutton Gregory, Sue Murphy, said, "We jumped at the chance to support Home Start by sponsoring an evening with Dame Judi Dench. The tireless work that Home Start undertakes for families in and around Winchester is vital, and Dutton Gregory is delighted to be able to give something back to the community by helping them in this way." Judi Dench in conversation with John Miller will take place at the Winchester Guildhall on December the 12th at 6:30 p.m. and will be followed by a book signing. Tickets cost £15 and can be obtained from November the 1st in person from the Winchester Cathedral box office or by calling 01962 857 275. That was 01962 857 275. And that article is accompanied by a photograph of a very well recognised Dame Judi Dench.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, first person and Belgarum, and then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements this week. Bloomfield, Robert John Bloomfield, died peacefully on the 24th of October, aged 88. Bowering, Peter Edwin Bowering, died peacefully on the 21st of October, aged 90. Cull, Pamela Cull, died at home on the 16th of October, aged 75. Davies, Helena Ann Davies, a recent teacher at Sparsholt Primary School, has died aged 55. Goodenough, Alan John Goodenough, died on the 18th of October, aged 81. Ivkovich, Mary Jean Ivkovich, who died on the 19th of October, aged 85. Pete, Irene Joan Pete, died on the 11th of October at Devonish House. And Small, Ruby Small, died on the 19th of October, aged 96. Now we have Christian comment read by Albie, please.
And Christian comment this week is by the Reverend Paul Kennedy, Rector of East Winchester and Area Dean of Winchester. And it comes under the heading, Change is a Challenge for the Church. You have to change to stay the same, said the abstract artist Bill de Kooning. He recognised that to do the same thing while all around you changes is not to do the same thing. It's a challenge for the church, an organisation which is naturally drawn to do the same thing as its founding events, the Jesus experience, are 2,000 years old. The social environment of Hampshire is changing, and the church will need to change to engage with this dynamic context, but this involves the risk of upsetting regular parishioners and takes energy and endurance. We could start with the purpose of the church. We are to be people who recognise that we are blessed by God, a blessing we experience in Christ Jesus and then share. We are to be salt of the earth and light of the world as we seek the best for our society and share our faith. However, our inherited model of church involving building, vicar and Sunday morning is struggling to engage with contemporary people's lives. It's time to become re-immersed in our context. Of course, this is nothing new. In the 1960s, Vincent Donovan wished to share faith with the Maasai of Tanzania. He recognised that his understanding of church was contaminated with Western assumptions and practices. To share, he had to embrace local practices. We've lived with continuous change for several generations, and the church has just about kept pace. We're now in a period of discontinuous cultural change. Contemporary change is disruptive and unpredictable. If pollsters have a hard time, so much more the church. To resonate with our context, we need to encourage dissent within the church. Dissenters are those with imagination, those who can see ways of bridging gaps, and the best dissenters are dreamers who do. According to the Catholic priest and anthropologist Gerald Arbuckle, for the church to engage with contemporary culture, you need both pathfinding dissenters who drive the change on the ground, and authority dissenters in a leadership position, giving space and encouragement to those pushing the bounds. Leaders can either facilitate or squash cultural engagement, and the church can be primarily for our society or for church members. It's hard to imagine new ways of being the church. Sometimes it feels as if we're in a room and the only available world view is from that room. However, in any building, there is a room next door with a different view, a view we can see if we can only move into the adjacent room. If we can see that view, then we can embrace new possibilities. It's the adjacent possible view of change. We can either stay in our room where we are comfortable and where we can consolidate our own view of church, or we can embrace different ways of being church and of engaging with society. As a church, we need to turn away from narrow models of Christian life and recognize God's image in those who are not in our image.
Thank you. Now we step on to letters to the editor, and the first one's going to be read by Nikki.
And this is from Anne and Richard Quick, headed High Street Dying. Sir, congratulations to Joanna Lewis on her outstanding letter, published on October the 13th edition of the Hampshire Chronicle. In it, she summarises everything that is going wrong in the centre of our historic city, due largely to the decisions being made by the powers that be who have been elected to lead us. If they have not already read this letter, then may we suggest that they do so immediately and take on board what she is saying before it is too late. Leaving aside Silver Hill, which is an entirely different problem, the High Street is fast being ruined, firstly by the penetration of the market stalls, which completely dominate the pedestrian precinct, making the lives of the independent retailers more and more difficult. Secondly, the ever-increasing number of fast food outlets and takeaways is totally unnecessary in a city of this size and only tends to increase obesity and rubbish. Quotes, "The High Street is now dying." Unquote. Everything that Joanna is saying is very relevant, and if Winchester is going to survive as a city where people want to live and tourists want to visit, then the council must listen to the independent retailers and to others who are equally concerned about its future. At present, Mondays and Tuesdays are the only 2 days of the week when the High Street is not dominated by the presence of market stalls, and what a joy it is to be able to meander down it, enjoying the views and shops. If the council chooses to ignore what Joanna Lewis is saying, it will be a sorry day for our city. We just hope that they will not let that happen. And that was from Anne and Richard Quick, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
This letter is from Catherine Turnis, and it's headed High Street Living. Sir, I would like to respond with my thoughts to Ms. Lewis's column published in last week's paper, titled "The High Street is Now Dying." Far from dying, the city is award-winning, with its best place to live status still fiercely celebrated by many. The streets adjacent to the High Street continue to grow, with 3 independent businesses opening in as many weeks, and I'm losing count as to how many awards these unique businesses are winning. Many congratulations to Chococo, Jeremy France Jewellers and the Hambledon on their recent accolades. As for the High Street, to my knowledge, Next will not be affected by the apartment refurbishment above its retail space. Monsoon and Moda in Pelle have departed in recent weeks. Sadly, high rents, rates and unrealistic sales targets are contributing to their decisions to close their doors. But given that Pret-a-Manger have already applied for planning permission to open in one of the premises, this shows that there is still demand from renowned brands to open up in the city. I'd personally like to see more fashion retailers, but these brands are only responding to consumer needs. I can't remember the last time I saw a quiet cafe in Winchester. So how do we get a more competitive market? With the latest business rates revaluation published for 2017, it's no surprise that the average rate for Winchester premises has increased by 11.6%. The southeast was always going to be hit the hardest, helping other national high streets, with a vacancy rate soaring over 25%, compared to Winchester's at a mere 6%. Developing Silver Hill could help drive down rates and rents. And the BID is looking forward to the creation of the planning document for this area over the next few months. But in the meantime, I would encourage every business to challenge their views, their rates, with the VOA office. You can request a simple valuation on their website, and the turnaround is rather quick, though I'm sure this will increase with demand. So my advice is, get in first. Catherine Terrace, Executive Director, Winchester Business Improvement District.
And the next letter comes from Councillor Eileen Berry under the heading Extra Venues to Make City All Year Attraction. Sir, it was gratifying to read that there's an endeavour from various interested business people and the City Council that Winchester should become an all-year-round attraction. I have advocated for years that Winchester needed a bigger state-of-the-art museum to bring it into the 20th century, with an attached restaurant to cater for tourists and children alike. We have so much by way of history and artefacts that will never be seen if this larger facility does not happen. It is also very important that we have a venue other than the Guildhall, Theatre Royal and Discovery Centre, which actually cannot house the numbers and the artistic festivals that are now being held here. That number will increase if the city is to go forward. It's not just the artistic side of things, but we need a suitable music venue. Also, we should not turn our back on the young entrepreneurs and musicians and artists who need a place to produce their art and sell their work. There is no point in opening that door, as we did in Bar End, and then close it by losing the support of the university backer. We still have to find a way forward for this kind of enterprise. It is encouraging for young people to come forward knowing they have the support of the City Council and the city. While we must support this, we must also keep our eye on Winchester City itself. The market stalls, I have noticed, are becoming repetitive. We want variety and to encourage the best that we can get. The festive season is almost upon us. The golden goose is still laying the eggs. Let's not fall by the wayside. And there's a photograph of Councillor Eileen Berry, smiling optimistically, no doubt, inset to a photograph, the main photograph, which is of the front of the Winchester Guildhall.
And from Dr. James Howe, headed My Lifesavers. Sir, I write to confirm from my recent and current personal experience your article in the Hampshire Chronicle this week, leading the way for cancer treatment, page 21, indicating that Hampshire has been named as one of the best areas in the country for life-saving cancer treatment. In my case, the investigation of a number of suspicious bumps in my neck in March-April this year, carried out at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, led to my being referred to Southampton General Hospital, where a team of surgeons, led by Mr. Sharma, carried out a major four-hour operation. I was then referred on to the oncology department team, led by Professor Johnson and Dr. Davis, to undertake a six-month course of chemotherapy to treat my Hodgkin's lymphoma, which will conclude in just a few more weeks from now. Just last week, I was informed that the latest PET scan showed that I no longer have any active cancer cells remaining, which is perhaps just about the best news that anyone could receive. Throughout, all the medical treatment and care that I have received has been of the very highest quality, and I'm most grateful to all the medical and care staff involved. Quite literally, they have saved my life. And that's from Dr. James Howe, or Hough, spelt H-O-U-G-H, apologies if I've got it wrong, at Ruffield Close, Winchester.
This letter is from Maureen Mariner, entitled Blue Badges. Sir, I write in reference to the Hampshire Chronicle article published regarding the review of the Blue Badges, October the 20th. This week, my husband will be having an ankle fusion operation at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. This will require him to use crutches, as he will not be able to use the foot for at least 6 weeks. He is 69 years old. His initial recovery will last about 12 weeks, although it could take about a year to 18 months to totally recover. As it will be difficult to park at the hospital for his appointments, and also he will be unable to get on a park and ride bus easily, I contacted the Blue Badge office at Hampshire County Council to inquire about a temporary badge to help with parking in general. I was told to apply after the 12 weeks recovery was completed. I tried to explain that initially I needed a badge for those 12 weeks, as that was when he will be most disabled. I was told that they don't give out temporary blue badges, only those that last 3 years. This to me sounds ridiculous, as it means that if I was issued with a blue badge, I could then use it for 3 years, even though my husband will hopefully not need it after about 4 or 5 months. What a waste of taxpayers' money. And what about all those people that have one and are still using it when it's not necessary? May I suggest that there should be two types: permanent ones for those people whose disability will not improve at all, and temporary ones, perhaps for 1 year, which can be renewed if necessary. Maureen Mariner, Kelbourne Close, Chandler's Ford.
And now a letter from Richard York. City Falls Behind. Sir, Judith Martin's letter, Hampshire Chronicle, October 20th, suggesting a rethink of Winchester cultural policies in the context of the opportunities to build new facilities provided by Silver Hill and the station approach is indeed thought-provoking. Winchester is a city of magnificent cultural heritage, but for theatres, music venues, galleries and museums, it falls far behind many of its equivalent communities. Even tiny Wells, population 10,500, has just opened a 350-seat recital hall funded by private, corporate and charitable money. Many communities, large and small, Birmingham and St Ives being cases in point, have been amply rewarded by economic growth, extended reputation and general joie de vivre by investing in culture. And it does not do for the city council officers to say that there is no money for such ventures. overheard at the public viewing of the station approach proposals. Even in difficult times, collaboration between national and local authorities, charities, the corporate sector and private individuals can work wonders. If Judith Martin's opening shot is to propose the building of a new theatre and the repurposing of the Theatre Royal as a music space, then mine is to suggest that the city's cultural interests should speedily pull together a long-term vision for Winchester as a centre for cultural expansion.
That concludes the letters. Now we step back in time for the historical items. Nikki.
100 years ago, October 28th, 1916, Lieder gunned down. Count Sturg, the Austrian premier, fell victim to the bullet of the assassin. He was dining in a Vienna hotel when three shots were fired at him by a journalist named Adler, who had been sitting at a table further up the room. Struck in the head by one of the bullets, Count Sturg died almost immediately. The assassin was arrested and handed over to the police. On examination, he showed no regret for his crime, which he declared was the result of deliberation. Adler, who was the son of the leader of the Socialist Party in Austria, had dissociated himself from the official pro-war policy of the party, and in the journals with which he was associated, had attacked the government, what he termed its despotic and arbitrary measures. And a second item, headed News from the Front. Western Front. All through Tuesday night and through most of Wednesday, rain fell on the British front. The country at the firing line had become a mere undulating sea of mud, with trenches and shell holes almost full of water. In those circumstances, it was natural that there had been no infantry work. Both dispatches from headquarters on Wednesday reported only artillery activity.
A couple of things from 50 years ago, which takes us to October the 29th, 1966. River, a sewer. Resentful at the council being the subject of criticism over the effluent content in the Hamble River, members of Winchester Rural District Council decided a special investigation should be carried out by the Sewage Committee. Allegations of pollution caused by houseboats and local firms were made during the debate, in which the river was referred to as a slum and a sewer. The matter was raised by the vice chairman, Mr. D.G. Pumfret of Twyford, when it was reported that work was progressing on the enlargement of the Botley and Hedge End sewage disposal works. Mr. Pumfret told the council he'd recently heard from several quarters that effluent went from the council's sewage work into the Hamble, near the point which the tide reached. And the second item is no fluoride support. Disappointment at the lack of support for the fluoridation of domestic water supplies in Hampshire was expressed by the county medical officer, Dr. I. A. McDougall, in his annual report for 1965. The report, accepted at Winchester by the county council's health committee, said, "This safe, simple, and immensely important step in the field of preventive medicine is sadly postponed by emotional, unscientific, and often irresponsible controversy, with the result that a vast amount of dental decay will still continue to be the cause of so much suffering and disability."
And finally, two items, from 25 years ago, October the 25th, 1991. Park and Ride backed. Overwhelming public support, running at 87%, led Winchester traffic chiefs to press ahead with park and ride schemes to solve the city's transport problems. The results of an extensive public consultation were reported to councillors at the Engineering Services Subcommittee. But the committee meeting revealed problems in finding available sites for the scheme. The largest site at Bar End was the bypass, which would only be available once the controversial missing link of the M3 has been constructed. The earliest completion date forecast was the end of 1994. And the second item, under the heading M3 work to start? Preparatory work on the missing M3 link east of St Catherine's Hill could go ahead early next year if the government manages successfully to overcome European Community objections. Work was likely to begin in the next month on stripping turf from part of the area and transplanting it at Arethusa's Clump, adjacent to St Catherine's Hill. David Crocker, who with other leaders of the Twyford Down Association strongly opposed the government route, said of the plan to strip the turf, "Any work on SSSIs is irrevocable."
Thank you. That concludes historical items. Now we're going to move to first person. Graham.
Thank you. First person this week is written by George Hayter, and he entitles it "One Place I Can Always Relax." Some of the happiest times of my life have been at the dentist. I always look forward to going, whether it's for a filling or a check-up, a cap, or a root canal emergency. People who still dread dental appointments today forget that pain in the dental chair is pretty much a thing of the past. Modern anaesthetics have seen to that. After an initial pinprick, the nerve endings of even thin-skinned cowards like me are totally tranquilised. But the real reason I always look forward to a professional tooth care session is this. Being at the dentist is the only time in my busy weekday schedule that I can relax. At all other times, I'm under pressure to do something. Answering emails, mowing the lawn, trying to make money, and phoning people. No one can expect me to do any of them when I'm flat on my back under dental probing. Even on holiday, I feel under pressure to enjoy myself. And on days off, I'm under pressure, even if it's just to make headway in watching the hundreds of TV programmes I've painstakingly recorded. But when I'm pinned under the oral floodlight, I'm not expected to do anything because action is impossible. So delightful are these calming dental interludes, I almost wonder if I should eat more sugar to get more of them. It was only recently that I discovered that my love of dentists is unusual when I met a dentist socially. I asked what it was like being a dentist, and the first thing he said was, "Sadly, most people are fearful when they come for an appointment." Now, I'm wondering if the reason I get on well with dentists is that I'm not afraid of them. Perhaps they warn me because they sense my enthusiasm for dental treatment. Sorry, they warm to me because they sense my enthusiasm for dental treatment. But I got to admit that I've only been an enthusiast since I went private. I used the NHS until my early 40s when I couldn't find an NHS dentist in Winchester. So I signed up with a private practice in Southgate Street. I loved it immediately. Spacious and elegant waiting room, the vivacious Italian dental nurse, the charming Norwegian dentist. Although I became an enthusiast for the Norwegian, he was later reprimanded by the dental authorities for inadequate provision of out-of-hours emergency treatment, and his practice disappeared. It was only then, when I looked for a replacement private practice, that I realised how inexpensive the Norwegian had been, and I reverted to the NHS. But not for long. The conveyor belt approach to patients and lack of information about what treatment was being inflicted on me forced me to sign up with another private practice. I found one that seemed a bit cheaper than average, a few miles from Winchester. I'd been through a string of dentists there. All these dentists had been better conversationalists than my barber, any barber I've known. I don't think taxi drivers can compete either, and GPs don't have the time. Because it's an opportunity for introspection. A long dental session is not unlike church. Once the serious proceedings are underway and your mouth is full of instruments, you can do nothing except meditate.
Read roll. And now we're going to move on to Belgarum. Albie, we've got a couple of interesting
items. Belgarum this week has two alternative looks at the news. And the first comes under the heading, apostrophe wars rear up. It's been quiet on the wars of the apostrophe. Too damn quiet. People speak with a shudder, recalling the mid-1990s, when Kingsworthy, that's Kingsworthy, two words, no apostrophe, was riven by anguish. Was it Kingsworthy, two words, Kingsworthy, no apostrophe? Kingsworthy, one word, or Kingsworthy, two words, with an apostrophe? Belgarum recalls, or perhaps memory plays tricks, that the dispute that set neighbour against neighbour, brother against brother, okay, that's an exaggeration, made the pages of the Daily Mail. In the end, the apostrophe was defeated, and it is Kingsworthy, two words, no apostrophe. Could something similar be about to happen at Barton Farm? These photographs, and I'll come to those in a moment, that Carla Holmes, the developer of the 2000 home estate, is in two minds about the development. Kings Barton, two words, no apostrophe, or Kings Barton, two words, with an apostrophe. Perhaps we should be grateful that it is not Kings Barton, one word. For the record, the Hampshire Chronicle's style is Kingsworthy, two words, no apostrophe. But Kings Somborne, two words, with an apostrophe, and Bishop's Waltham, two words, with an apostrophe. And there are two photographs, as I've already mentioned. And the first says, coming soon, a stunning collection of two-bedroom apartments and two-, three-, four- and five-bedroom homes. Kings Barton, Carla Company, UK. And Kings Barton is two words, no apostrophe. And the second photograph is of a Carla Holmes signboard, which says, Carla Holmes, Kings Barton. And Kings Barton is two words with an apostrophe. Oh, and the second item, all aboard the loco on a low loader. It always looks slightly strange to see steam engines on the back of low loaders. Such sights are common in Oldsford, where the machines are regularly brought in to run on the watercress line. Locals have got blasé about Thomas the Tank Engine coming down Pound Hill on the back of a lorry. These two, and they appear in the pictures, the photographs, these two pictured were at the station in Alresford last week in preparation for taking in the Midhants Railways Autumn Steam Gala. And there are these photographs of the two low loaders with their steam trains on the back in the Alresford station car park.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements, and we'll start with what's on. And there's a few items to catch up with. The 17th of November, 4:30 p.m. is the City Centre Christmas light switch on. The following day, the 18th of November, 6:30 p.m. is the first day of the Christmas market. And then there's some Christmas activities coming up. Saturday, the 26th of November, there's a festive night with the King's Chamber Orchestra in Hope Church in Middlebrook Street. And more info about tickets and prices, 01962 840 800. Excuse me. On Saturday, the 3rd of December, in Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, the Wainfleet Singers. If you want information on tickets for that, it's they vary between £12.50 and £39.50. And that's 01962 857 275. On Wednesday, the 7th of December, in Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, there's a Christmas service, Light Up a Life. And that's all are welcome to celebrate life at this service. There is no charge, but there will be donations for Naomi House and Jack Space. On Friday, the 9th of December, at Winchester Cathedral, Sally Taylor, the host of South Today, BBC's South Today, will introduce a Christmas concert. Tickets vary between £15 and £40, and more information on 01962 857 275. And the same evening, in the Discovery Centre in Jury Street, Winchester, that's Friday the 9th of December, at 7:30 p.m, there's a Winchester Fusion Choir charity concert. If you want information on that, tickets are £7.50, and it's 01962 873 603. And on Saturday the 10th of December at the City Mill in Bridge Street at 3 p.m. there's a free concert of Christmas carols by the Alder Valley Brass Band. And one final item to mention, the Winchester Speakers Festival is back in December. Tickets are now on sale, and that's on Sunday the 4th and Sunday the 11th of December at the Discovery Centre. And you need to go to www.winchesterspeakersfestival.com. And amongst the speakers are General Sir Richard Shiriff, who is the recently retired Deputy Supreme Allied Commander Europe, and he's going to speak on why there is a real imminent danger of war with Russia. Tony Little, the former headmaster of Eton till the end of 2015, and he will be discussing views on education. Dermot Turing, the nephew of Alan Turing, the Bletchley Park specialist, will give the inside story of his life. And then we've got Lord David Owen, the founder of the SDP, Damian Lewis, the best-selling author, and a number of other people. Finally, A.T. Williams, who won the Orwell Prize, talks about justice at the Nuremberg trials after World War II. Very extensive programme. If you need information, www.winchesterspeakersfestival.com. Now, lighting up time ends on Friday the 28th of October at 7:51 a.m. and begins at 5:46 p.m. Obviously, there's a change this weekend because the clocks go back. So on Wednesday the 2nd of November, it ends at 7 a.m. and begins at 4:36 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive the recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this one is headed, Zany Zebra Auction rakes in nearly 90,000. Going, going, gone. That was the phrase of the night as Marwell's much-loved herd of Zany Zebras made their way out into the world and to their new homes. The herd of 48 colourful beasts was auctioned off to keen Southampton companies, organisations and fans, raising nearly 90,000 toward the zoo's Grevy's Zebra Conservation Programme. Starting at 1,000 apiece, the highest bids were for Snappy, bought by Demplan, for 4,000, the strawberry-inspired Zeeberry, whose new owner splashed out 3,500, Rio, who went to the restaurant Casa Brazil for 3,000, and the seafaring zebra, which was bought by ABP for 3,000. Marwell Wildlife's flagship poster boy sculpture, Gilbert, went to Gilbert Aviation with a winning bid of 3,250. Southampton City Council also spent 1,500 on Who's You, a Saints and Southampton face-inspired creation that they sponsored and who, until the auction, was quietly grazing on Guildhall Square. Project manager Kirsty Matheson said, "It was a great night. You don't know how it's going to go, but Mike Osmond did a great job as auctioneer." Marwell's Director of Conservation, Dr. Philip Rawdon, said the money will be invaluable. It will help us over the next 3 years. Much of the land in northern Kenya, where the zebras live, is being developed with oil pipelines linking up with ports in Sudan and Ethiopia. There is a lot of land grabbing going on, but when you work on the conservation of a species, it's always related to the people. Although the auction raised £87,550, miniature zebras will be available online until October the 25th, and money for the sale of merchandise will also be added to the grand total. All the money raised will go towards Grevy's zebra conservation projects that Marwell Wildlife helps coordinate in Africa. To bid in this miniature auction, visit www.easyliveauction.com, and Easy Live Auction is all lowercase with no dots. And there's some pictures of these wonderful zebras. Some are rainbow striped, some completely blue with sort of splashes of water. That must be the seafaring zebra. And a yellow one looks like a bee with black stripes, and various others. And people obviously thrilled to have won their auction, leaping off their chairs and smiling.
Work has begun on a new scheme to protect one of the most vulnerable areas of Winchester from flooding. The project provides flood alleviation measures for the northern part of the city, with works currently being constructed around St Bede's School near River Park Leisure Centre. It targets an area that was badly hit in the winter floods of 2013-14. This scheme follows a successful funding bid to government. It is being delivered and funded in a part-time partnership between Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, the Environment Agency and Southampton University. The current works, costing around £700,000, are the second phase of construction in Winchester and follow the completion of the dwarf flood wall in Water Lane last year. The measures consist of a mixture of earth buns and low-level walls, which have been carefully designed to blend into the landscape while being modelled by the Environment Agency to assess their effectiveness. It is hoped they will be completed within the next few months, depending on the weather. Work will be carefully managed and coordinated with the fireworks event in November. Winchester City Council's portfolio holder for environment, health and well-being, Frank Pearson, said this area of the city suffered serious flooding in the storms nearly 3 years ago. The City Council and its partners have worked tirelessly over the past couple of years to plan and secure funding for major schemes such as this one, which will offer significant protection to vulnerable areas should similar conditions arise again. And there's a couple of pictures. One small one, which is picture of the new defences under construction. It looks like a new sort of drainage culvert or something between a roadway pathway and a land area. But in a larger photograph, dating back to 2013-14, of a couple of guys, not terribly expertly, paddling a rubber dinghy around on the rather extensive floodwaters.
Parking changes to help patients. Patients and visitors will find it easier to park at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester thanks to new barriers. The barriers, which are in operation on the patient levels of the multi-storey car park, are expected to result in a threefold benefit to patients and visitors. They should discourage drivers who are not going to the hospital, freeing up space for patients and people visiting sick relatives. An added benefit is that patients and visitors will pay for their parking when they leave, rather than in advance. This means that they will not have to guess how long their appointment or visit will take, removing added stress and preventing overpayment. In addition, Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, is introducing a new scale of charges, with the addition of a free period of up to 30 minutes for drivers dropping patients off for appointments. The Trust has also reduced the cost of parking for up to 1 hour, previously £1.80, and added the option for both patients and visitors to apply for a £10 7-day pass. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals, said, "We are hopeful that these measures will make it quicker and easier for patients and visitors to find a parking space at Winchester Hospital. We understand that attending hospital can be stressful and are doing all we can to make sure that struggling to find a parking space does not add to this. Where possible, we would also encourage our patients and visitors to use the park and ride facility, which we make available to our staff free of charge. In order to exit through the barriers, drivers will need to visit a pay station before they leave, enter their registration number and make a payment. Once they've done this, the barrier will open automatically when they approach. The new charges are up to 30 minutes free, 30 minutes to 1 hour, £1.50, 1 to 2 hours, £3. 2 to 4 hours, £4. 4 to 6 hours, £6. 6 to 8 hours, £8. 8 to 24 hours, £10. All other areas, pay and display. Up to 1 hour, £1.80. 1 to 4 hours, £3. Above 4 hours, £6. Concessionary permit holders, £1.40. Due to high demand for parking on site, if you have a planned appointment or scheduled visiting time at the hospital, we strongly recommend using park and ride. The current cost is £3 per day, £2.50 after 10:30 a.m. Park and ride operates 6 days a week.
Jury sees video of banker and victim. A Hong Kong jury has watched chilling video footage of a former Winchester schoolboy banker allegedly torturing an Indonesian woman he's accused of murdering. The footage also appears to show Rurik Jutting then talking for hours about how he repeatedly raped the woman and then killed her without feeling any guilt or emotion. The video was shown on the second day of Jutting's trial for the murders of Sumati Ningsi, 23, and Seneng Mujiasi, 26, whose bodies were found in his apartment near the city's red light district in 2014. Jurors were played about 20 minutes of video in which Jutting apparently tortures Miss Sumati. The media and public could not view the footage but heard the audio. At one point, 31-year-old Jutting could be heard saying, "If you scream, I will punish you, understand?" Later, both jurors and the public gallery were shown hours of iPhone video in which Jutting, wearing no clothes, delivers an extended rambling monologue on the camera. "My name is Rurik Jutting. About 5 minutes ago, I just killed and murdered this woman here," he says into the camera, moving it to show her body in his bathroom shower. He says on camera that he held the woman captive and raped her repeatedly. Jutting, who worked for Bank of America Merrill Lynch, instructed equity finance and trading, said he had earned more than $1 million over the previous 2 years, but had spent most of it on drugs and prostitutes. He watched the court proceedings from the glass screen dock, showing no expression. Jutting had pleaded not guilty to murder, with prosecutors rejecting his attempt to plead guilty to the lesser charge of manslaughter. If convicted, he faces life in prison. At one point in the video, he holds up to the camera a small plastic bag, apparently containing cocaine and a rolled-up Hong Kong $10 bill. He is seen snorting the drug several times in the videos. The last clip shown was apparently filmed after he killed Miss Seneng. The trial is scheduled to run for 3 weeks.
Lost glasses see way to good cause. Thousands of pairs of glasses lost on train journeys across the south have been handed over to an international eye care charity. Southwest Trains, SWT, which runs about 1,600 trains a day through more than 200 stations throughout the south and southwest, has given more than 2,500 unclaimed glasses from its lost property department. The glasses have been donated to Vision Aid Overseas, VAO, a charity which helps to provide eye care and glasses in Africa. They will be environmentally recycled and used to help back VAO's programmes across the world. Michael Pugh, SWT spokesman, said, "I'm always amazed at the number of glasses that are left behind on our services. When I see that hundreds of pairs were left unclaimed every year, I thought there must be a way of putting them to good use. By leaving their glasses behind, our passengers are indirectly having a massive impact on improving the lives of many Africans. SWT lost property, which is unclaimed after 3 months, may be shared with charities and worthy causes across the network. Unclaimed toys were also donated to the Naomi House Hospice at Sutton Scotney, and a haul of unclaimed books went to 27 book exchanges across the network."
Beat the Bulge initiative sees Gran lose 7 stone. £2 million ploughed into slimming classes. Those are the two headings on this next item concerning super slimmer Patricia Brooks, who has urged overweight Hampshire residents to take advantage of a free weight loss programme. In a bid to beat the bulge, county health chiefs are ploughing £2 million into funding slimming classes for obese residents. As previously reported, the move by Hampshire County Council is aimed at tackling the rising levels of obesity in the county, with latest figures estimating that 65% of residents are overweight or obese. But one Hampshire woman thinks it could be money well spent. Patricia Brooks from Hampshire lost over 7 stone after her GP referred her to Weight Watchers. After struggling with weight all her life, the 64-year-old grandmother finally started classes when, after a long-haul flight to New Zealand, she couldn't do up her seatbelt and was too embarrassed to ask for an extension. While there, visiting family, her grandson asked her why she was fat, and she found herself too embarrassed to don a bikini at a pool party, so went in fully clothed. Mrs. Brooks had also developed health problems as a direct result of her weight. She said, "I had problems with sciatica, for which I had to have regular physio and acupuncture, and I was out of breath even climbing the stairs at home. I used to drive everywhere. As a fat grandma, I found it impossible to join in activities with my grandchildren. Even getting up from playing with them, sitting on the floor, was a struggle." Mrs. Brooks was referred to Weight Watchers via her GP, and after keeping a food diary every day, she lost 5 pounds in her first week, just over 2 stone in her free 12-week referral period, and 7 stone, 2 pounds after 21 months. She said, "I used to drive everywhere, but now I enjoy walking instead. I also attend 3 exercise classes a week. I started slowly with a gentle Pilates class, but now I also do Fitsteps classes and kettlebells with circuit training. I'm so pleased how far I have advanced from being a couch potato, and so are my family. My family and friends have been a great source of encouragement. I love cooking and entertaining, so it has been great for me to get new recipes and ideas from the Weight Watcher magazines and cookbooks." And there are 2 photographs, before and after. And what a transformation 7 stone off makes.
Stars receive uni honours. Prominent public figures who have excelled in their respective fields were honoured by the University of Winchester last week. More than 500 students packed into Winchester's famous cathedral to see best-selling author Bill Bryson and film critic Mark Kermode receive honorary doctorates on Thursday. Held during the annual graduation ceremony of the University of Winchester, the morning celebration saw Mark Kermode, film critic for The Observer and the BBC, awarded a doctorate of letters for services to broadcasting. Speaking moments after being presented the honour, Mr. Kermode, who lives in Brockenhurst, said he was delighted and humbled. "It was a wonderful ceremony," he said. "It was terrific to see so many people here. For every single one of them, it is a monumental day, and it is impossible to feel anything other than pride." In the afternoon session, award-winning author Bill Bryson was presented with a doctorate of letters for services to literature. This was his 11th honorary doctorate. Mr. Bryson, whose books have sold more than 15 million copies, said, "I am truly honoured and delighted to be here and part of the day. I'm not just happy because about being part of the ceremony, but also because it took place in the cathedral. It was really wonderful." The American, who lives in Hampshire, published his latest book in February, titled The Road to Little Dribbling. It examines his long-standing affection for Great Britain. Eddie Jones, head coach of England's rugby union team, was also due to attend to be presented with a doctorate of science for services to sport. However, due to a family emergency, the Australian was not able to attend the event. The university said he will have to come back another year to be presented with the honour. Professor Joy Carter, vice-chancellor at the university, said, "We are excited to be honouring a number of truly inspirational individuals who in their distinguished careers have made significant contributions to society with the awards of honorary doctorates and fellowships." More than 2,000 students graduated in 8 ceremonies presided over by TV personality and Chancellor of the University, Alan Titchmarsh, MBE. "Graduation is a time of celebration as we congratulate our students on their achievements," added Professor Carter. "I am incredibly proud to see our graduates leave with the knowledge and wisdom to go and make a real difference in the world, and I wish them every success in the future." Other prominent individuals recognised by the university with an honorary doctorate this year included Sarah House, a water and hygiene engineer working in international development, horticulturist Roy Lancaster, CBE, former Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell, former diplomat and governor of the University of Winchester, Dick Wilkinson, ethical jeweller Greg Valerio, and artistic director Kate Prince. Alan Parton, the founder of charity Hounds for Heroes. Rebecca Murray, campaigner and founder of Article 26, a project supporting forced migrants to take part in higher education. And Gloria Vesey, barrister and founder of charity Advocates for Children, were awarded honorary fellowships. And there are lots of pictures. There's one particularly charming one of beaming Bill Bryson, obviously thrilled to get his 11th, or was it 12th doctorate. A group of very charming Asian girls, all in their mortarboard hats, clutching bouquets of flowers, picking up their graduations, and a gang of others holding up their mortarboard hats, because, as we know, not allowed to throw them up anymore in case they come back and hit them. So health and safety says they can only hold them up. But they're all beaming and happy and dressed up, ready to celebrate their doctorates.
Wonderful. Whoa, we're going to Ibiza, says the headline. Holidaymakers will be able to travel to another famed destination from Southampton Airport next summer. Airline Volotea, which services small and mid-sized European cities, is set to expand its operation from the south coast with a route connecting Southampton and Ibiza. The Barcelona-based low-cost carrier will operate a flight once a week from May the 25th to the Balearic Island. Ibiza has a number of old towns and quiet beaches, as well as its more famous nightlife, Ibiza Town and Sant Antoni, where major European nightclubs have summer outposts. The island is also home to quiet villages, yoga retreats and beaches, from Platja d'en Bossa, lined with hotels, bars and shops, to quieter sandy coves backed by pine-clad hills found all round the coast. Dave Lees, managing director of Southampton Airport, said, "We're delighted that Volotea have introduced a new route to Ibiza for summer 2017, which will run alongside their existing route to Mallorca. Being able to offer a range of different destinations for summer sun is one of our main priorities, and we hope to see many people travelling to Ibiza in 2017, as well as to Mallorca with Volotea." The announcement comes a week after the airport was named Europe's number one regional airport by the European Regions Airline Association at the organisation's General Assembly in Madrid, beating the likes of London City, Bern Airport, Leeds Bradford, Budapest and Rotterdam. Southampton was the first UK airport to sign a deal with Volotea, and this year three other new airlines have started flying from Southampton. KLM, with worldwide flights via its hub in Amsterdam, BMI Regional, which launched a new service to Munich, and Aer Lingus, which launched direct flights to Cork. And there's a nice sunny photograph of Ibiza.
Rink's Very Ice Way to mark the festive season. Christmas will come to one of Winchester's most iconic festive locations in style this year. Winchester Cathedral Ice Rink has undergone a special makeover for its 10th anniversary, as it will have a clear span roof, so families can enjoy a rain-free skate. Another new feature has been revealed too, in the form of a selection of pre-bookable food and drink packages. The ice rink cafe, bar and kitchen can also be used as a venue for Christmas parties. The Christmas Winchester Cathedral Ice Rink and Christmas Market open on November the 18th, with the Christmas Market closing on December 20th, and the ice rink shutting on January the 2nd.
Hunt for Winner. A mystery £1 million lottery winner who bought their ticket in Hampshire has just a week left to claim their prize. The search is on to track down a lucky buyer who picked up a ticket in Havant for the draw on May the 4th, but has yet to make themselves known. Every week, the Lotto Millionaire raffle guarantees to make two millionaires. Andy Carter, senior winner's advisor at the National Lottery, said, "Time really is running out for the winner of this prize. We're still hopeful that someone will come forward at the very last minute to claim the money. We're urging everyone to check their old tickets one final time or look anywhere a missing lotto ticket could be hiding. This life-changing prize could really help to make dreams become a reality for someone out there." The ticket holder has only until Monday, October the 31st, to make their claim. If it is not claimed, then the prize money will go to help National Lottery-funded projects across the UK. Anyone who believes that they have the winning ticket can call the lottery line 0844 338 7551.
Call to have free flu vaccine. Hampshire County Council is encouraging those who are most at risk from catching flu to take up their vaccination this autumn, as flu immunisation remains the most effective method to help protect against flu. Councillor Patricia Stallard, Executive Member for Health and Public Health, explains, for most healthy people, flu is an unpleasant but short-lived illness. However, people who catch flu pass it on to an average two people, putting our most vulnerable at an increased risk. It's important that these vulnerable groups are protected, and I would encourage those who are eligible to take up the free flu vaccine. The NHS offers the vaccine free of charge to those individuals most at risk from catching flu and developing serious complications. This includes anyone who is the main carer for an elderly or disabled person at home, pregnant women, the over 65s, and others with certain existing health conditions, such as diabetes and asthma. Hampshire County Council is also again providing flu vaccines to its frontline health and social care staff who work with elderly or vulnerable groups. This helps those in the county's communities who are most at risk to stay well this winter, as well as the staff who support them. Children can also spread flu to others in the community. Extending flu vaccinations to children not only protects them, but will also help to reduce the spread of flu within families and the wider community. Therefore, this year, the nasal vaccine is being offered to children aged 2 to 4 years, those in Hampshire school years 1, 2 and 3, as well as those with a long-term health condition. The vaccine is reviewed annually to match the main flu viruses expected.
Appeal after family's cat hurt by air pistol. A hunt has been launched after a family pet cat was shot in Hampshire. The RSPCA is appealing for information after a cat was shot in the back with an air pistol. The 3-year-old tabby, called Slim Shady, was found at her home in Kipling Road, Eastleigh, with blood on her back from the wound. She was taken to the vet, who did an X-ray which revealed a 1.7 calibre pellet, likely from a pistol rather than an air rifle, lodged next to her spine and an enlarged kidney. She's now had an operation and looks to make a full recovery. RSPCA Inspector Penny Baker said Slim Shady was lucky to survive. The shot missed her spine by millimetres. This bullet went into her back and then grazed her kidney. Whoever shot her must have done so deliberately. Owner Dawn Morgan, 33, said, "She had blood coming from the wound on her back, but it didn't occur to me that she'd been shot until the X-ray results. The wound was on top of her back, as if she'd been shot from above. There's no question that this wasn't deliberate." I know some people don't like cats in their garden, but to take out a gun and shoot at them is something I find hard to understand. Slim is making a good recovery. We are lucky she wasn't more hurt. Anyone with information can contact Penny Barker via the RSPCA on 0300 123 8018. 0300 123 8018. And there's a photograph of Slim Shady, a sorrowful and sad-looking pussycat, back still shaved from the operation, and a collar to prevent scratching and biting at the wound.
Trust to celebrate Jane Austen's work. She is celebrated the world over and made Hampshire her home. Next year marks the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's death. Many of her classicals, classics such as Pride and Prejudice, Sense and Sensibility and Persuasion, were inspired by her home surroundings. Now the Hampshire Cultural Trust, HCT, is organising a host of events called the Jane Austen 200 to celebrate the work of the author. And she died aged 41 and lived in the village of Chawton, now Jane Austen's house museum. A series of walks, performances and exhibitions will honour her life's work next year, including rare portraits and handwritten alternate endings. Established in 2014, the HCT manage and operate 26 arts and museums facilities and handle 2.5 million objects that relate to the internationally significant history of Hampshire. One of the exhibitions they are putting on to mark Jane Austen's death is The Mysterious Miss Austen, which includes five portraits in the same place for the first time ever. One of the artworks has not been seen by the public in over 40 years. Two of the pieces have come from the National Portrait Gallery in London, with three others being supplied by private collectors. Another rare piece of memorabilia is a handwritten manuscript that holds an alternate ending to her famed and final novel, Persuasion. This has been loaned to Jane Austen 200 from the British Library. Open to the public on May 13th next year at the gallery in Winchester Discovery Centre, The Mysterious Miss Austen will celebrate the globally acclaimed author all through the county. Janet Owens, Chief Executive of the Trust, said, "Jane Austen has been a much-loved figure worldwide for more than two centuries, so we're pulling out all the stops to celebrate her life and works here in Hampshire. Whether you are a Jane Austen scholar or have enjoyed one of the many TV or film adaptations of her works, we will have something for everyone, young and old, to celebrate her legacy. Austen continues to inspire many young authors today, something that is not lost on the HCT. A competition has also been organised as one of the events for both children and adults. The younger generation are invited to write a 400-word letter in the style of A Day in the Life of Jane Austen. Adults, though, are asked to pen a short story of 2,017 words based on Jane's infamous quote from Mansfield Park. Quotes, "Selfishness must always be forgiven, you know, because there's no hope for a cure." Entries close on February the 28th next year. There's a couple of photographs, probably the one of Jane Austen that no one had seen for 40 years, and another of her house in Chawton, which is now a museum, a very pretty, mellow, red brick house.
First aid call for bonfire night events. Remember, remember. First aid in November. This is the call from St John Ambulance, who has issued simple first aid advice as the county prepares for bonfire night celebrations. The charity is urging everyone to learn some basic first aid skills ahead of November the 5th. Ambulance volunteers will be attending fireworks events across the county so that anyone who needs first aid gets it quickly. However, injuries are much more likely to occur at private parties where trained volunteers won't be on hand to help. Every year, more than 1,000 people will visit A&E for treatment of a firework-related injury in the 4 weeks around the November the 5th. But with some basic first aid skills, everyone can be prepared to help in a firework first aid emergency. Marita Edwards, Community Training Coordinator, said St John Ambulance is keen that people enjoy Bonfire Night, but don't end their celebrations in hospital. Fireworks and bonfires can provide fun and entertainment for families at a time of year when the evenings are rather dark. For first aid information, visit www.sja.org.uk for more first aid tips.
Fridge freezer dumping ban. Householders will no longer be able to take old fridges and freezers to dumps across Hampshire due to a national waste cycling scheme grinding to a halt. Environmental chiefs at Hampshire County Council have run out of space at waste recycling centres across the county following the crisis. Now they have made an impassioned plea for members of parliament to pressure the government to overhaul the scheme to help dispose of the potentially environmentally damaging appliances. More than 2,500 fridges and freezers are lying in dumps across the county. Under regulations introduced by the government, the responsibility for the safe disposal of redundant fridges and freezers rests with the manufacturers who've been required to set up a scheme to collect and deal with such appliances. But the national scheme put in place by the manufacturers and regulated by the government has ground to a halt, leaving councils across the country with hundreds of redundant fridges and freezers filling up their waste centres and no capacity to accept any more. County Council Executive Member for Environment, Councillor Rob Humby, said, "I'm very disappointed to hear that the national issue of collecting, storing and treating fridges is now having an impact on residents in Hampshire. This problem has been building up for months with no effective measures being put in place. Therefore, we are pressing the government to tackle this issue as a matter of urgency. It really cannot be fair on councils or council taxpayers to foot the bill for the failure of this government-regulated scheme. I am particularly disappointed that the government seems more interested in micromanaging every detail of how councils' recycling centres operate, rather than tackling the urgent national problem of a huge stockpile of fridges and freezers filling up waste sites across the country. Until the government acts to resolve this, I regret to say that with over 2,500 fridges already filling our centres and all the extra storage we've been able to provide, I have no choice but to say we cannot accept any more fridges or freezers at our waste centres. I urge the government to act quickly and would ask Hampshire MPs to make sure that this matter receives the attention it deserves. If necessary, raising it in Parliament." And there's a photograph of one of the employees putting a third fridge freezer on top of two more in a picture which shows some 30-plus fridge freezers at a recycling centre piled up with nowhere to go.
Support for those affected by benefit cap. A housing benefit cap support scheme has been launched in Winchester. It will offer advice for people affected by the new cap, which will start on November the 7th. The cap is part of government's ongoing welfare reforms and limits the maximum amount of benefit working age claimants can receive in out-of-work benefits, and is set to affect around 100 people in Winchester, in the Winchester area. The City Council is running the project, which involves working with colleagues in the Housing Department and partners at Citizens Advice and Job Centre Plus. The Council's benefits and welfare team will also provide advice on debt, money management and access to work. Leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, said, "We believe we are providing an innovative solution to help our residents by working with partners to provide advice. For those residents who work with the team, we can provide additional support to bridge the gap between their rent and new cap level whilst they work with the council, partners and stakeholders to look at restructuring their finances or access into work. The cap does not affect those who have someone in the household working over 16 hours, so finding a job is a key purpose of support. The advisers will be available for drop-in sessions at Winchester City Council offices in Colebrook Street on November the 18th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and on December the 2nd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. There will also be sessions at the Job Centre Plus, at Citygate, in City Road and other venues across the Winchester area in November and December."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks and goodbye from our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible. And don't forget to place the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.